Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, pictures of prisoners from a notorious Iraqi jail mark the 20th anniversary of the United Nations Convention Against Torture. The Catholic Church in England and Wales prepares to celebrate its annual Day for Life. But first, Pope Benedict holds his weekly general audience here in the Vatican. Welcome to the programme. Thousands of pilgrims and visitors packed into the Paul VI Audience Hall here in the Vatican on Wednesday morning to hear Pope Benedict's weekly reflections on some of the great teachers of the early Church. As normally happens, the Pope greets many different groups in their different languages. This week he had special words of welcome for participants at an international conference on adult stem cell research. My colleague Charles Collins has all the details.
Participants of an international meeting on stem cell research attended the Pope's weekly general audience on Wednesday. The conference, which was hosted by Rome Sapienza University, looked at alternatives to embryonic stem cell research, which destroys unborn life.
Al riguardo, la posizione della Chiesa.
Speaking in the Pope Paul VI Audience Hall, Pope Benedict said the position of the Church is clear and supported from science and reason, that scientific research is promoted and encouraged as long as it does not cause the destruction of human beings whose dignity is inviolable from the first moment of existence. The Holy Father was speaking after giving his catechesis, which was a continuation of his series on the early figures of Church history. On Wednesday, he spoke about St. Cyril of Jerusalem.
Cyril is best known for his catechesis, which reveal his orthodox doctrine and his pastoral wisdom. The catechesis prepared the catechumens of the Church of Jerusalem, first, to receive the sacraments of Christian initiation, and then, after their baptism, to understand more deeply the Church's faith as expressed in the sacred mysteries. Based on the symphonic harmony of the Old and the New Testaments, and centered on the fulfillment of the ancient prophecies of the coming of Christ, the Catechesis explains the articles of the Creed and the Lord's Prayer, the reality of baptism as an event of a spiritual rebirth, and the importance of the sacramental life and personal prayer for every Christian. Cyril's catechesis spans God's entire plan of salvation accomplished through the work of Christ in the Church. With a rich doctrinal, moral, and mystagogical teaching, the catechesis remains a model for instruction today, leading the whole person, body, soul, and spirit to a living experience of Christ's gift of salvation.
This week's audience was the 100th general audience of Pope Benedict since he became Pope in 2005. In total, 2,180,000 people have attended. I'm Charles Collins.
And my thanks to Charles Collins for that report on Pope Benedict's weekly general audience. Sunday, July the 1st, is being celebrated by the Catholic Church in England and Wales as the Day for Life, an occasion to raise awareness about the value of human life at every stage and in every condition. Since this year's event also recalls the 40th anniversary of the passing of the Abortion Act, legalising the termination of pregnancies in England, the organisers have decided to focus on the reasons behind the Church's opposition to abortion, as well as the practical, emotional and spiritual help it provides to women and babies in need.
Alongside clarity about the Church's teaching regarding the right to life and therefore the evil of abortion, we have an obligation to offer as much practical help as we can to women who are faced with this dilemma.
Bishop Bernard Longley is an auxiliary in the Diocese of Westminster in central London and one of the main coordinators of this annual Day for Life. He told me the church must work hard to make its pro-life teachings better understood within society at large.
For us, that is very important because at the ordinary level of meeting with people in the street, we are only less than 10% Catholics in the United Kingdom, and so very often we're speaking with people and working and living with people who don't fully understand the Catholic Church's teaching. We need to bring greater clarity into the public forum, and so we also want to use the Day for Life in order to help Catholics to understand more fully the Church's teaching and to equip them to enter into conversation with others so as to put forward that teaching more plainly and to overcome the obstacles that so often do come up when speaking about the value of life as God's gift and the right to life and the implications that that has in our modern society.
So what kind of ways, what kind of initiatives are you promoting then to try and, as you say, help Catholics to come to a clearer understanding and to help them help other people understand the Church's focus on life?
Every parish receives particular material each year, and for the last 4 years, the Bishops' Conferences in England and Wales, together with Scotland and Ireland, have tried to prepare material together so as to draw on the strengths and insights of Catholics in each of those different territories, but also so as to make maximum impact in focusing on particular things. This year, sadly for us, marks the 40th anniversary of the Abortion Act, and in that period, more than 6 million lives have already been lost, been terminated, and we're very aware of the impact that this anniversary can make, particularly by focusing on what the Church is doing to help people in vulnerable situations, women especially, pregnant women, faced with pressure to end the life of the unborn child through an abortion. And so we want to highlight the ways in which the Church has offered practical help alongside its very clear teaching. And so in Scotland, we're marking the 10th anniversary of the Cardinal Winning Initiative, which is for a particular help for women faced with pressure to end a pregnancy. In Ireland, the 30th anniversary of CURA, similar organisation, and in England and Wales, the 30th anniversary of the Life Organisation. And alongside the materials to encourage prayer and reflection and discussion, we also take a collection among the Catholic community. And this year it will be partly in support of Life Healthcare Organisation, which offers practical support for women facing pressure to end a pregnancy.
It's very important, isn't it, to focus on this practical positive action, as you call it. Tell us a bit more about how and where this organisation Life works.
I think that's very important, that alongside clarity about the Church's teaching regarding the right to life and therefore the evil of abortion, it is both and at the same time we have an obligation both to offer as much practical help as we can to women who are faced with this dilemma. Also, in addition to that, and Life does this through its various agencies, to offer a place in which women who themselves have experienced abortion, who have ended pregnancy, can experience reconciliation, can know that in God's merciful love there is a way of finding healing within their own lives and forgiveness, and there is a practical expression of that too through the work of the Life Agency. It is many of its resources are based in London, where the population and the circumstances make them most needed, but they are present in other parts of the United Kingdom, and in those places they offer counselling, they offer practical support, they offer a vision and a way ahead to women faced with the pressure to end a pregnancy, but also they provide counselling and practical help for mothers and their children. And I think one of the joys of people working in life is getting to know these mothers and the children who are the result of their relationship with life. And so offering practical support to those particularly single mothers who are in great need.
As you say, this year marks the 40th anniversary of the Abortion Act, legalising abortion in the United Kingdom. Do you think that with the advances in medical science that attitudes in Britain today are changing towards this legislation?
There has been a shift, I think, in understanding and particularly in perception, public perception. For a long time, and I don't know if it's something about the British temperament, about turning away from what is unpalatable to some pleasant matters of life and death, but that is one of the obstacles that we need to overcome in order to present in a rational and reasonable way the truth about abortion and also the truth about human life before birth. And certainly the development in technology has recently meant that now images of the child in the womb are available, which emphasise the humanity of that new person. And that has had an influence. It's beginning to have an impact. Public perception, I think, is changing. And therefore, there's more of an openness to a debate, to having a public debate on these issues. It's interesting, too, that within the medical profession, we understand that many, many more doctors are uncomfortable about being involved with abortion procedures. And that too is something which I think needs to be explored and opened up. And in particular, Catholic doctors, I think, have a role in helping that debate to be more fully discussed.
Thanks there to Bishop Bernard Longley, Auxiliary in the Diocese of Westminster in central London, and one of the main coordinators of the annual Day for Life in England and Wales. Shocking pictures in black and white, faces twisted in terror and pain, naked figures humiliated and abused. You may have seen such images before. They're taken from the photos of prisoners in Iraq's notorious Abu Ghraib jail, which seemed to shock the world when they were first published in the media and on internet, yet just a couple of years later have all but faded from the public consciousness. Pictures of man's and woman's inhumanity to man, which should be unthinkable in our 21st century democracies. Yet such practices are increasingly being justified as necessary tools in the global fight against terror.
I guess once these pictures were brought out in the open, and I kept thinking that America was going to take responsibility for what it did, that it would in some way acknowledge that there had been torture, that it was a systemic aspect of the system, you know, of the military system, and that they would try to do something to rectify this. And when it became clear that they were in fact going to become extremely legalistic, try to blame it on a few bad apples, I just felt it was intolerable.
American artist Susan Cryle was so struck by these shocking images, she wanted to make sure they did not disappear from public view, but remained as a permanent reminder of the need to step up the fight against torture today.
Torture is not something that is tolerable in this point in time. Never was, but I think that certainly now, particularly with the kind of internationalism that there is and the instruments that exist that make it possible to monitor such things, that it's just simply unacceptable. And I felt that I had to do whatever I could do to bring this to the attention of people. And the thing about photographs such as the ones that were taken at Abu Ghraib is that there's a way in which they horrify and then they're tossed out and thrown away and sort of become a vestige, a memory way in the past.
Kreil has created a collection of drawings which portray in simple chalk strokes all the humiliation and dehumanization that went on behind those prison walls. Yet beyond these stark images, her portraits also depict the full fragility of the human condition, and many reflect a strong spiritual sense, with figures stretched out or hung like a modern-day Christ on the cross.
I felt that if I could find a way to do it in drawing, in something more durable, something that has texture and the feeling that you get from art materials, that it might have a way of getting into the consciousness of people and staying there a little longer.
Do you think that the average man or woman on the street in America today shares your horror at what happened at Abu Ghraib? Do you think it is becoming part of the consciousness, or are people, in fact, more willing to accept torture today than they were, say, before 9/11?
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword in an odd kind of way. I think on the one hand, there is a horror about it, but there's then a way in which that horror is being incorporated into the culture itself. I think that the kinds of things we're seeing in the media and in movies where torture has clearly become much more acceptable, and I think the very fact that torture has become real torture on real time in real media has become a standard that we see and are exposed to. But I don't think people like to think of themselves in America, which has always had a kind of moral position in the world, that we are doing this. I don't think a lot of people like it.
What is your message through these pictures to people who perhaps are interested but would like to do something more?
I think it's that ultimately we have to acknowledge our humanity, that we are all human, and that everybody has a right to their dignity. It does not matter what anybody has done, they have a right to some dignity.
Kreil's work is on show here in Rome at a Trastevere museum, next door to the St. Egidio lay community headquarters. The exhibition was inaugurated on June the 26th, the date celebrated around the world as the UN's Day Against Torture. This year, the observance also marked the 20th anniversary of the UN Convention Against Torture, which has been ratified by over 140 nations. Over these two decades, prevention mechanisms have been set up and laws have been introduced at national and international levels to stop the use of cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment of prisoners. Yet according to many observers, the war on terrorism is increasingly undermining that process to ban torture on both legal and moral grounds.
Half of the countries in the world still practice torture, unfortunately. But I think the big deal now with the fight against torture is that it's a pity that democracies started again to practice torture.
Sylvie de Pontoil is president of FIACAT, the International Federation of Christians for the Abolition of Torture.
They built or they contribute to build the human rights fields and the absolute prohibition of torture. But since the 11th September, now they feel that they have to fight against terrorism. And to fight against terrorism, they think that the practice of torture is a useful tool. Of course, they are wrong to think about this. And because of that, idea, they thought, and especially the first of the democracy, United States, thought that perhaps torture is a useful tool to fight against the terrorism. So I think, we think in FIACAT, International Federation, and all the national organization of FACATs, we think that the art is a good mean to fight against torture, because it's very simple for people to understand very efficiently that torture is legally and especially morally prohibited, because it dehumanized people, dehumanized human beings. Because of the people fear of terrorism, they think that they could perhaps support the government to practice torture, because they thought that, well, terrorist people are not so human as we are, you know. And we would like to fight against this feeling in our European countries, in our Western countries.
You represent the Federation of Christians specifically against torture. What particular role do you think the church plays here in getting this message across?
For us, it's very important because, first, as Christians, we have to go after Christ and the example of the Christ. Or the Christ is the figure who is tortured, in fact, on the cross. So we think that Christian people could understand how torture is so horrible, is so dehumanizing people. Then we think also that Christ delivered a message of love to our enemies. And perhaps the art of this message now and nowadays is that terrorist people are our enemies. In fact, they are our enemies. They would like to destroy our societies, our values, especially Christian values, because they fight against Christianity and so on. And we think that to leave exactly the message of gospel, we have to treat these people as we would like that we would be treated ourselves, you know. We wouldn't like that our values of dignity, of human rights, of civil liberties, well, all things which are founded our democracy, we wouldn't like that they should be destroyed by this fight against the war of terror. And we think also that as a Christian organization, churches, of course, Catholic churches, because we are in Roma, in the heart of the Catholic world, but not as only Catholic Church, also all the Protestant churches and also the Orthodox churches, all the world of Christianity, they have to show example to the rest of the world, because we have to send to the world a message of fraternity, not only solidarity. For me, solidarity is just human, but fraternity is the message that Christ delivered to each people, even the worst man as a terrorist one. Why? Because as Christians, we have a message of forgiveness. We should say to everybody, well, you do very bad thing, but you know God loves you. God welcomes you if you ask him his forgiveness. Perhaps you can, in the future, you can be a better man or woman. We feel that very strong, and so churches and Christian people can tell this message to the all of the world.
What exactly would you like to see Christians doing to become more involved in this struggle? How would you like them to be trying to spread this message?
Especially first, as the International Federation, I'm waiting for a common and very strong message from all the churches together. In fact, actually, we have a message from the ecumenical organization. We have a message from the Catholic Church. from Pope John Paul II and now from Pope Benedictus XVI. But we didn't have until now a message, a common message from them, the two of them. And we would like to get this common message because we think that if, as Christian churches, they speak as one voice, it's much, much more stronger to the world to be listened.
Looking at the pictures in this exhibition, what would you say is the most striking thing about these shocking images?
Well, for us, it's much more, these pictures are much, much more strong than the photograph we saw and which are spread all over the world. Why? Because the photograph are just showed the reality, just brutal reality. So it's horrible and it didn't let any hope. But these pictures are different. They are very tough. Of course, they are very tough. It's hard to show, to see, and to have a look at them. But they show, in one part, the inhumanity, but in the other part, the humanity of the looking of the painter, you know. And it's a call, it's a sort of a call to us who are looked on these pictures. Well, you have to stay human. You have to keep and to fight for the respect of dignity, of human dignity, even for all these men. So for me, this picture brings a message of hope in humanity, you know, and it calls an appeal to everybody to fight against these practices of torture.
Thanks there to Sylvie de Pontoile, President of the International Federation of Christians for the Abolition of Torture. And earlier you heard American artist Susan Kreil, whose exhibition entitled Abu Ghraib, Abuse of Power, is on show at the Museo di Roma in Trastevere in Piazza Sant'Egidio until September the 30th. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. Now stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.